It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and now we check in on opening weekend of the state firearms deer season that is less than 2 weeks away. The DNR hopes harvest totals will rebound this year. DNR figures show over 309,000 deer were killed by hunters last year. That was down from 2020 figures. Join in on the nine-day gun deer season, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff Pritzel is here, deer program specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Jeff, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Good to be here.
Well, let's start with Wisconsin, one of the country's premier whitetail deer hunting states. What sets us apart?
I think a couple of things set us apart. One is just the amount of opportunity we have in this state relative to the size of the state and our population. And so on a per capita basis, I think we see a higher percentage of our population in the state participating. And the number of deer that are available and number of deer that are harvested in the state always rank in that top echelon across the country.
What do you see happening on our western border, Buffalo County, among, you know, home to the biggest bucks? What makes the western part of our state such a haven for hunters?
Well, it's that perfect mix of a landscape of habitat for deer. It's the cover that's provided by the woodlands and the wetlands intermixed with the agriculture and the open space. I mean, deer are a product of the landscape. They do well, they do best in broken up, fragmented habitats with a lot of edge, with a lot of disturbance, because they do better in young landscapes. Young vegetation supports more deer, but more deer isn't always the objective or the answer, because the more deer you have, the less resources are available for each individual deer to express their maximum potential. And so what you have in that western tier of counties and really in the driftless part of Wisconsin as a whole is just this perfect mix of habitat. And then also the soil types, because the soil type really creates what the vegetation is going to look like and what the nutritional value of the vegetation is, whether it's natural vegetation or agricultural. And that mixture of shallow bedrock, that dolomite limestone provides minerals to the vegetation, which provides minerals to the deer, which allows the bucks to generate larger antlers.
Are deer overpopulated in Wisconsin? What do your numbers look like?
Well, that's an interesting question, because one of the fascinating things about Wisconsin is it's so diverse from north to south and east to west. And depending on where you're at in Wisconsin, there's a very different answer to that question. And so in general, we look at the state in four different zones. Two zones we consider farmland zones, the central and the southern farmland zones. And then we have two forest zones in the state, the central forest and then the large northern forest. In general, in the agricultural zones or the farmland zones, yeah, deer productivity, because of that great habitat mix I was talking about, the productivity of the herd tends to outpace our ability to keep up with it from a harvest standpoint. And so we do have areas in the farmlands where the deer densities are higher than what we would desire. On the other side of the spectrum, in the forests, there's been some long-term changes in the makeup of our forests in Wisconsin that are really driven by the forestry industry and our history of timber harvest. And that has changed over time. And with it, its ability to support deer has changed. So in much of the forested part of the state, I don't think too many people would describe it as overpopulated with deer. In most cases, they're probably closer to being in balance with what that landscape can support.
Jeff Pritzel with us, deer program specialist for the state DNR, as we talk about Wisconsin's gun deer season, less than 2 weeks away. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jeff, I understand you hunt in northern Wisconsin, and what have you seen in terms of deer hunting traditions and how they've changed over the past decade?
Well, they definitely have changed quite a bit. And I think in general, again, if we looked at the state as a whole, people are hunting closer to where they live. Deer hunting used to be the bulk of it, the premier aspect of deer hunting was this migration to the forested zones in the state, as I was describing earlier. And as deer hunting opportunity has gotten better and better in the farmland, more people have decided to stay closer to home rather than shift. Or we see a hybrid, and that's what I do. I go up north for the first part of the gun season because I love that Northwoods experience, but I'm not going to be up there for the entire 9 days. I'll go up there for the first part of the season, and then I'll come back home and hunt in the farmland where, quite honestly, my chances of filling a deer tag and putting a deer in the freezer are better closer to home. But I still love that northern forest experience for the deer camp aspect of it, the room to just wander. We're blessed with a lot of public land. But in general, I think people would say that emphasis of heading north, the deer camp, has faded over time. And for a lot of people, that comes with a sense of angst for that nostalgia and that tradition. But the culture of deer hunting is evolving and changing as everything does. And that opportunity is still there, but it's probably a smaller group of people that are doing it. And then, of course, there are the northern Wisconsin residents that are there all the time. They do hunt up there throughout the season. And so they've seen that change over time, too. But the opportunity is still up there for those that make that choice to make that part of their deer hunting experience.
What shifts do you see in where hunters hunt, public versus private land in gun deer season?
Well, we're like I said earlier, we're blessed with a lot of public land in Wisconsin, but it's still less than 20% of our state as a whole. And so deer hunting as a whole is much more a private land experience. You know, about 82% of our land is privately owned, and about 87% of our harvest, you know, takes place on that private land. And so public land is a different experience. The public land hunter approaches it in general a little bit differently, a little more opportunistically, because I think they view their chances of successfully getting a deer maybe aren't quite as high as it is on private land. So they're more apt to take the opportunity that's presented to them. Whereas a private land hunter may feel more comfortable that, I'm going to have multiple opportunities this season. I may not take the first one.
they can be a little bit more choosy.
One of the biggest changes we've seen over the last couple of decades is the selectivity of the hunter. Whereas back in up until the 1980s, hunters were pretty opportunistic. They had an opportunity to fill their permit. They took it. In the last number of years, because of these higher deer populations in the southern part of the state, hunters have had more of a sense of, you know, this might not be the only chance I get. I might sit back and wait for a better one.
What does your acreage need to be, or how many acres do you need to hunt deer in Wisconsin, or what land is able to be suitable to hunt on? Because I know farmers often allow their land to be used for hunting, but what does that acreage have to have?
Well, again, it totally depends on where you're sitting, even within a particular county. For example, myself, I personally own a parcel that's huntable that's less than 5 acres in size, and it's where my residence is. But it happens to be positioned on the landscape in a corridor of habitat, and so deer travel through that corridor. And so that little 4 acres, less than that, of woods that I have that I can sit in is well strategically located, and that's all I need. Now, I can't offer everything a deer needs throughout its life cycle on my acreage, but I happen to be strategically located. But I don't need that much property. On the other hand, there are landowners, whether they're recreational landowners or farm landowners, you know, that are blessed with larger acreages, and they can consider, how can I meet the needs of the deer within my property to track them, and hopefully they spend more time here and I get more opportunity to see them. But few of us own what we consider the home range of a deer. Most deer, especially the does, live out their life in about a square mile at their home range. And the bucks, it can be a little larger than that, especially now during the breeding season where they're traveling more areas, you know, looking for does. But so most of us that are private landowners have to look at the property nested within a little larger area, because what's going on the neighbor's properties in the surrounding area will have a strong influence on what they'll see. Again, deer are really reacting to land use, and what we're doing on the land really influences where and how and when we see deer.
Jeff Pritzel with us, deer program specialist for the DNR. Join in on licenses, deer tags, your favorite places to hunt and why. Safety, join in on CWD, chronic wasting disease, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin has this long and storied history of regulated gun deer hunting reaching back over 170 years, according to a DNR chronology closed deer season occurring only a few years after statehood. Join in on your deer hunting traditions, questions about licenses, tags, baiting, CWD, and more. Join in at 800-642-1234. We have the DNR's deer hunting program specialist, Jeff Pritzel, who stays with us. Jeff, state estimates say the annual deer hunt brings more than $1 billion into the state's economy each year. Can you explain that impact and where that money goes?
Well, sure. There's the, and when we use that general round figure of $1 billion, that's usually attached to hunting in Wisconsin as a whole, not specifically, you know, deer hunting, deer hunting and the firearm deer season that's coming up that we're talking about certainly does bring in the lion's share of that. And it's everything from actual, you know, you can do the economic calculations to say how many jobs that supports and creates in Wisconsin associated with retail sporting goods, associated with, materials and acquisitions, the venison processing industry for people that have a professional process their deer for them, and then there's the conservation economy of it, in that the way the North American model of wildlife management that was created, you know, again 100 years ago, recognized that the participants of deer hunting and other hunting, by contributing through purchasing a license and then purchasing their equipment and then belonging to organizations that express their enthusiasm for the event, all those dollars come back to help fund conservation in Wisconsin as a whole. And so, you know, again, I've mentioned white-tailed deer are pretty much a product of the landscape. They're reacting to and in presence based on other things that are happening, not necessarily intentionally directed at deer. And so one could argue that the money that's invested for the deer hunting experience doesn't all come back specifically to deer hunting. And that's true. But with pride, we carry the fact that deer hunting funds a lot of other conservation activity in the state. And I liken it to purchasing a deer hunting license is less like purchasing a ticket to an event or a voucher be exchanged for something. It's much more like a membership or annual membership to the Y or a facility that you're investing in that infrastructure so that it's there for your community. And that's really what's happening with the deer hunting participation.
A Wisconsin resident's $24 to buy a gun deer hunting license, not residents, $160. I'm wondering, do you see any inflationary pressures with hunting, and where are you seeing that?
Yeah, certainly this year, the price of ammunition and things like that are following the same trend as other things, and the whole supply chain issues that affect us in our life in a lot of ways have influenced hunters in terms of even access to ammunition. Hunters have had to do a little more planning ahead to make sure that the ammunition they're using for their firearm is available to them. Another thing we're seeing this year that's, you mentioned at the opening that the deer harvest was down a little bit last year. Mm-hmm. And it's all relative. Most of that drop last year was a drop in antlerless deer harvest, not buck deer harvest. And that was a little concerning to us because antlerless deer harvest is the way we we manage the deer population in balance with this landscape, as you were talking about earlier. And when that dropped, it didn't drop as a reflection of less deer available. There were other things going on that are a little hard to tease out. The good news is this year, the antlerless deer harvest so far, looking at the archery harvests to date, has rebounded. I think part of that might be driven by the fact, again, the economy that things are going this year, people might be a little more inclined to put a deer in the freezer for their meat source this year, given trends in meat prices and that type of thing.
Jeff Pritzel with us, Wisconsin DNR, as we look at the impact of deer hunting on the state's economy. You can join in on gun deer season, 800-642-1234. Denny is with us from Ogdensburg. Denny, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Well, a couple things. Good morning. Jeff is very knowledgeable. He's right spot on. I'm 73. I've hunted the state my whole life in the West, but I hunted in the northwestern Wisconsin for years. But I think it's something that's going on. If you could camp on the forest in the Flammable River State Forest, if you applied for a permit, I believe 3 years ago, there were about 70 permits applied for, 52 years ago, 16 last year. And for a number of reasons, number of deer, people are too busy working, aren't going to make the trip. My gang went from five people to me. My boys long work and can't hunt anymore. I live in Waupaca County. The problem there is it's all private land. And if you don't own or know somebody that owns $7,000 an acre deer property, it's going to be tough to find a place to hunt. But overall, thank the DNR. You guys have a thankless job, and you're doing a pretty darn good job at it.
Well, thank you. Denny, thank you for bringing your personal experience and your traditions over the years. What do you make of Denny's story, who is now hunting alone, Jeff?
Yeah, thanks, Denny. He captured a lot of things that are right on about the cultural change we've seen in Wisconsin as far as how we go about deer hunting. And some of that, we tie that to, we think of our traditions and our heritage, and we think that we always want it to stay that way because we have these memories that are locked into past experiences. But the reality is it does change, and it's always going to. Then the question is it changing for the better or for the worse? And one of the things, you know, Denny brought up is that to the degree we try to avoid it happening, it's almost a natural evolution of what we see is this disparity when we talk about in terms of the haves and have-nots. And the reality is that progression happens in the world of deer hunting as well, and we've seen that play out. One of the great things about Wisconsin is the opportunity that everyone from all walks of life can participate. If you go into other states, southern states that have even less public land than we do, that aspect of being in a position financially to be able to afford the access to go deer hunting becomes even more extreme. So we still have those opportunities in Wisconsin, but we have seen shifts where in certain areas of the state that are predominantly privately owned, there's been a relative shift of access and opportunity over time as folks have. And we saw this shift really happen in the 1990s when a combination of things happened. Deer numbers really were escalating. Opportunity had never been better. And the economy was really roaring in the 90s too. And that put a lot of people in the position to capture their own little piece of heaven. And a lot of recreational or a lot of forested land changed hands over that period of time. And people purchased because they are understandably, they wanted their own piece of this experience not necessarily perpetuity, but that transition did unfortunately probably shift out some people's access and opportunity in parts of the state.
So what about the next generation of hunters? What type of things can you do to keep the tradition alive?
I think the future and the next generation of hunters, what we're seeing is what's interesting is the attraction and the entry into hunting is changing also. And it's what we're seeing is the people that are coming in now, new aren't necessarily, it isn't just this generational transition of as a youngster, you saw your family hunting and you couldn't wait until you aged in and got old enough and could start participating. And we looked at our entry to the experience as that pre-teenaged window. Mm-hmm. Right now, a lot of people that didn't have that access and experience as a youngster are seeking it because they're looking for things within their life, their quality of life, really focused on sourcing, where's their food coming from, and the attraction to hunting as a source of food procurement.
And let's pause right there with Jeff Pritzel of the DNR. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is a deer hunting destination, and according to the DNR, firearms remain the most popular way of killing deer. Jeff Pritzel here, deer program specialist for the DNR, our guide to the 9-day gun deer season. Let's go to Rick in Marshfield with a question. Rick, what's on your mind?
Good morning. I shot a buck yesterday, and as I was cleaning him out, I noticed black specks on the inside. And I was just wondering if there's any visible indication of CWD that you can see when you're cleaning out a deer.
Rick, thank you. Jeff?
Sure. That situation that Rick is describing, we hear about that every year. And you see little black specks throughout the muscle tissue of the animal. And what that is little spots of hemorrhaging. So basically, the animal was experiencing stress, was perhaps, you know, running quite a bit. And in that process, it creates little micro hemorrhages of capillaries bursting and whatnot. And so those are just little specks of blood. It's not harmful. It's not an indication of anything other than in those situations, that animal and that loose, you know, blood within the muscle tissue may not necessarily enhance the table fare or the flavor of that deer down the road. So it might help you make a decision as to what to do with the meat of that particular deer. It might be one that, you know, the primest cuts will still be, you know, great meat for steaks and on the grill, but you may be more inclined to use that deer for sausages or other products where other flavors are introduced, because it may not be the best situation from a flavor standpoint, but it's not an indication of disease in the animal. It's an indication of a really strong physical experience that the animal just went through. It doesn't happen very often, but we hear about it every year.
When you're processing a deer, though, can you find visual indications of CWD?
No, okay. Not in terms of, visually what you would see, and this is, again, let's talk about CWD in a moment, that the process of that disease in the life of the animal is a long, slow process, a year and a half to 2 years from the point of infection or of the animal to the point where it is physically able to see that the animal is diseased. That clinical stage where you can actually see the animal is suffering from the disease happens really quickly at the end of this cycle. So in a 6-week period, the animal can go from looking fine to looking very thin. And that's really the physical clue, is that the animal is really, really thin and maybe wasn't behaving correctly. But there's a whole bunch of other things that can cause that to happen in a deer. So just because it's in that state doesn't mean that it's got chronic wasting disease. That's why the only way to really know is to test the nervous tissue and the lymph node. And the main thing we look at is a couple of key lymph nodes, where if that animal is carrying the disease, that's where it's most likely to show up.
What is the testing scheme, and what should hunters know in terms of the DNR's approach to controlling CWD?
All right. So there's the aspect of the opportunity or the ability to control the disease, which is one thing. And then there's just the responsibility to accurately monitor the presence of the disease and track where it is and how it's changing and what's happened over the course of the last 20 years in Wisconsin. And we accomplished that through hunter cooperation and hunter providing samples. And we basically allow that to happen throughout the state. We try to make it as convenient as possible. And the mechanism for doing so is once a hunter harvests a deer, and whether they're going to process it themselves or take it to a processor, the head of the deer is removed, because up high in the neck is where these lymph nodes exist. And so then the head is brought to one of these self-service kiosks. A form is filled out. We've made that easier through an app on a phone now that you can enter all the information. And then the head is placed in these kiosks. And then the department collects those, and we send those, we get the lymph nodes out, and then the analysis is done. And we do, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20,000 deer a year in the state through hunter cooperation. And so we try to make that as easy as possible, and we encourage people to do so, because that just helps us make more informed decisions, you know, down the road. The aspect of controlling the disease is really another conversation. And most importantly, as is the case with a lot of disease management, it has to do with population density. And when population density of that animal is on the higher side, they're more stressed, they have more contact with each other, and transmission is higher. And so fundamentally, the most important thing people can do for controlling and managing chronic wasting disease is to keep hunting deer, and to keep that deer population from expanding higher than what the natural habitat can be. And then also having the awareness of not incidentally moving the disease across the state by moving a deer carcass from an area that we know has the disease to an area that doesn't, and then perhaps disposing of the waste part of the carcass out on the landscape and introducing it to a new area. So an emphasis we've had over the past 4 years is the placement of dumpsters that are specifically designated for the disposal of deer waste so that it doesn't end up back out on the landscape.
Has that worked so far, those dumpsters?
It certainly has worked in terms of people embracing the use of them, the demand for having more of them put out on the landscape. And there's a grassroots aspect to this, where local communities and organizations like sportsmen's groups and stuff actually can cost share and help fund the placement of these dumpsters and putting them in strategic locations. They've been used a lot, and they've been used very cooperatively. One of the initial concerns when entering this program was that people were going to use these dumpsters for inappropriate uses, like putting other garbage and that type of thing in them. And that really hasn't happened. So thanks to the community and thanks to people, it's working the way it's intended. From a volume of total deer waste that's generated in the state, you know, for the hundreds of thousands of deer that are harvested, you know, proportionally, it's not capturing a lot of a majority of the deer waste, but it's probably capturing the most important portion of that. And it's sending a message to people that may dispose of their deer in other ways to just make sure they're doing it responsibly, and that the carcasses end up in properly engineered landfills and not back out on the landscape.
We have the state DNR's deer program specialist, Jeff Pritzel, fielding your questions. Rick in Marshfield, thank you for the call. Let's go to Gordon now in Crandon. Gordon, you want to talk about baiting, I understand.
Yeah, I'm an old guy that lives here in Crandon. I've been hunting in this area and lived here for 75 years and hunted for 63 of those. And I was on the DNR website the other day checking on what counties you can legally bait in and what counties you can't. And it looks to me like there's three counties that it's legal to bait in. But wherever you go, people are buying corn and whatever and baiting deer like crazy. I'm against it. I never did like it. I'm totally against it. I think that when this was started probably 30 years ago or more, it literally has ruined deer hunting up here, because all people know how to do is walk out in the woods and dump some corn on the ground and sit there and wait for a deer. It's been a negative in every way. The deer feed at night. They don't see them during the day, and you hear this year after year after year. Then add to that the fact that we got too many wolves up here. They congregate whatever few deer there are. The wolves move in. It's a bad situation.
Gordon, thank you for the call. Jeff, your insights on baiting deer.
Sure. Thanks, Gordon. What Gordon brings up is, we mentioned earlier in the show that deer hunting is a microcosm of our culture. Actually, it was part of the introduction. And the issue of baiting is the perfect example of that, where it's a very polarizing issue. We have a contingent of the deer hunting community that does view that as an asset or helps them, you know, be more successful. And then another portion of the community that sees it as a detriment, and that back and forth has been playing out for a long, long time. The discussion has become focused on, again, going back to chronic wasting disease, because of one measure of mitigating the spread of chronic wasting disease is to prevent baiting, because it's just one angle of that can enhance the concentration in the community and the collective transmission of the disease and that type of thing. So, but as he was saying, it's actually, there's 17 counties that baiting is legal currently in the state. There's three counties that just became legal again. And this is a change. The way the state law is set up right now is that if chronic wasting disease is newly found in an area, that institutes a baiting ban. And that baiting ban has a sunset clause that if another positive animal is not found within 2 or 3 years, the baiting ban is lifted. And so going into this deer season, we had 14 counties that allowed baiting, and three additional counties, their ban sunsetted. And so now there's 17 counties where it is legal. But if you take CWD off the table, there's still a very vibrant discussion about the pros and cons of baiting, for the reasons that Gordon was bringing up and how it influences deer movement. And it kind of comes down to, again, we've got this vast variation in the state. We have over 500,000 deer hunters. Some of them are trying to play out their deer hunting experience in great deer habitat. Others are honestly kind of in marginal to less than marginal habitat. And so they're looking for ways to enhance their experience. And the first thing one of the things they look at is, if I were allowed to use bait, that might increase my opportunities. But there's a trade-off there, because it might decrease the opportunity of a neighboring property who's also trying to get that deer's attention. So then they put bait down. And some people that are baiting, you know, you'll ask them why they do it, and they'll say, well, I do it because my neighbor does it. And because if I don't, the deer will all go to the neighbors. And so that's part of that situation that Gordon was describing.
And the DNR then has to kind of toe the line on these different philosophies on deer hunting. Is that difficult for you?
Well, it certainly is, but I think everybody recognizes, you hear it over and over, that deer hunting, deer management, deer hunter management has always been a challenge, because you'll never please everybody. And there's always winners and losers and trade-offs in any strategy change or rule change. One of the misconceptions, though, that people have is that it's the department is behind the scenes pulling all the strings and making all the decisions. In reality, we are a reflection of the culture and what people's desires are, because the rule changes and the statutes that dictate what we're doing really play out within state statute first, and that's with the legislature. And so they are passing bills and acts based on the input they're getting through the democratic process, and it's the department's responsibility then to carry that out. And then there's administrative codes where, and in those cases, the Natural Resources Board can make those rule changes. But we can provide information, supporting information to help base those decisions. But in the end, it's not us making the call. We're really a product of what the public process, you know, expects and wants out of us.
The DNR's Jeff Pritzel, our guide to gun deer season. His tenure at the DNR, by the way, spans 30 years. Still time to ask your questions about gun deer season, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the DNR's deer program specialist. Jeff Pritzel is here on the Gun Deer Opener. Starts the Saturday before Thanksgiving, and we look at the impact on Wisconsin, how the firearm deer hunt connects to conservation. Let's take another call now. Joe in Eau Claire. Hi, Joe.
Hey. Yeah, I do my hunting up in Florence County, and it's a privilege just to just to catch sight of a deer up there. They're so far and few between. I assume that this is mostly due to the fact that there's less food for the deer to forage up north compared to the southern part of the state. I was wondering if the DNR has ever tried moving some of the southern herds up north, if that's feasible or not, and if not, why. Also, I think I heard that they were doing some they're going to cut down some trees in Florence County, and that's supposed to, I guess we're crossing our fingers.
That could impact, yes. Let's get some insights here from Jeff. Just a privilege to see a deer in Florence County, Jeff. What about moving the herd?
Sure. Joe brings up a couple of great points. Let's talk about that aspect of relocation of deer first. Because relocation of wildlife has been used a number of times very successfully to bring animals back into an area. But in the case of white-tailed deer, there's a couple of quick, the short answer is we can't do that and wouldn't do that, tying back again to chronic wasting disease issues, because you wouldn't want to take deer that come from an area of the state that may have been exposed to chronic wasting disease and move them and introduce them to an area that currently, as far as we know, you know, doesn't have chronic wasting disease. So that in and of itself is an issue. Then the other issue is, as Bill brought up, it's food related. And so if that landscape can only support 10 or 15 deer per square mile, which is not a lot of deer. Past studies have showed that when you're at that 10 to 15 deer per square mile, the perception to the average hunter is there are no deer. They're not going to see them very often. But if you brought more deer in there to say, let's bump it up to 20 or 25 deer per square mile, if there's not enough resources for that many deer to survive through the winter and through the bottleneck, they're going to perish anyhow. So it does come down to food. And our deer populations in Wisconsin are extremely tied to our forest resources and the forest harvest strategies that have happened over time and over the decades. And the reality is, as a forest grows older, it supports fewer deer. So Florence County, as Joe brought up, is a perfect example of differences depending on where you're at. Florence County, you can really draw a line through the middle of it, north and south, and the western half of that county is dominated by older growth forest, not the greatest deer habitat in the world, so you're not going to see all that many deer. But it's a wonderful landscape to stretch and move and all that kind of thing, but it's going to take a lot to see a deer, as Joe described. But the eastern side of Florence County, very different landscape, much more fragmented, more activity going on, and deer are flourishing on the eastern side of the county. So if I talk to a deer hunter in eastern Florence County, they'll give me a very different experience and forecast than someone on the western side of the county.
Wow. So such nuanced there in one county. Joe, thank you. Judy now in Milwaukee. Judy, hi, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a little different question. What about deer that are hit by vehicles and laying on the side of the road? I'm here on the northwest side of the city near a very busy highway street, and there's a deer laying there. And I saw that the other day in another area along a busy street. Is there any agency or company that's tasked with removing those? What are they doing with those now?
Thank you, Judy. Jeff?
Yeah, the recovery or the collection of vehicle-killed deer has kind of gone through an evolution over the last decade in Wisconsin. Honestly, if you look back, Wisconsin had a very strong program years ago, and it was nested within the Department of Natural Resources from a funding standpoint, where we were very vigilant about supporting the funding to collect road-killed deer, you know, for a number of reasons. But that was kind of unique to Wisconsin. A lot of our neighboring states just didn't do that. They didn't invest because there is an investment there to do that. And people's expectation and realization of the fact that there's unfortunately vehicle killed animals, and deer being one of the larger ones on the roadside. And they tend to be just go through the natural processes of decomposition or scavenging and that type of thing. In recognition of the financial reality of collecting deer, the way that happens now in Wisconsin is it's been redistributed to the municipalities that are in control of that road. And so the state highways are handled with state contracts, the counties do their highways, and then the townships and municipalities, so you see variation in how they can financially approach that strategy. So you do see a few more deer that may stay on the side of the road longer than was the case in years past.
Judy, thank you for the call. We only have a few moments left here. The gun deer season ends on the 27th. What do you hope the deer population will be post-hunt, Jeff?
Well, post-hunt, the deer population as a whole, is going to be fine. We've seen our harvest strategies kind of stabilize over the last decade. And the harvest does give us a barometer of, acts as a barometer of how the deer population is doing, going up or down. But it's not as connected as it used to be. Like I said earlier, hunters have become a little more selective than they used to be, not as opportunistic. And so the harvest isn't necessarily as representative of the total deer population that's out there. But and again, the story plays out so differently from one corner of the state to another. It's always hard to talk about it
holistically,
on a statewide scale. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you bet. I wish everybody a great experience of memories that are going to be created over the next coming months. And that's just, I think, what makes Wisconsin deer hunting great.
Jeff Pritzel, deer program specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And tomorrow, the deer hunting conversation continues. Dan Small from Outdoor Wisconsin joins the Larry Mueller Show to talk about everything from butchering to roadkill, plus tells the story of a 14-year-old hunter who took home a huge whitetail during the youth hunt. That's tomorrow at 11 on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.